Okay, guys, so this is more of the research that I've really been more involved with and I've been working on recently. So today I'm going to be talking about the climate effects of pollen production in the United States. So this is an interannual climate variations on pollen production. And previously, this is kind of an updated analysis from a webinar, I believe, from last year. In that previous webinar, we kind of just looked at pollen associated with just your long-term climate and your long-term locations, really. So what's the difference? And what this one is like, so are we saying that spring temperatures affecting spring pollen? So the implications of climate change, if our spring temperatures are actually changing in the future, how will really that affect pollen production in the future? So that's what this kind of analysis goes into. All right, so first here's my outline. Just first of all, really a background of pollen and health. So please bear with me for my colleagues who have already seen all this, the background information on the health effects of pollen. Then we go into the purpose of study, the data and methods, the results, and then the conclusions. All right. Sorry, guys, just grabbing some water there. So outdoor allergenic pollen and molds are the primary cause for a seasonal allergic rhinitis, or commonly known as hay fever. So these symptoms, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with, include the watery eyes, the nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, post-nasal drips. So in the Atlanta area, we experience a lot of this allergic rhinitis from the oak pollen. So hay fever, it's more than just an inconvenience. It is estimated that treatment costs exceed $11 billion annually. So these treatment costs would include medical visits and prescribed medications. So these costs do not even include over-the-counter medications. So also economic costs of allergic rhinitis in the U.S. exceeds $5 billion through lost work days. So there is a known linkage between pollen and health. A study in Montreal found that as grass pollen increased, asthma-related ER visits also increased in children. A more recent study in the Atlanta area, conducted by one of our colleagues, Dr. Jeremy Hess, found a similar conclusion that there is a 10 to 15% increase in risk for asthma-related ER visits during these high pollen count days. Another interesting study in New York City found that allergy medication sales increased after peaks in oak, maple, and birch pollen. And this is important too because it's difficult to get data tracking allergic illness allergic rhinitis. So another indicator might be medication sales. So all these studies underscore the health effects related to pollen exposure, and especially in children. However, allergic rhinitis it doesn't affect just children. The prevalence in the general population is estimated to be 15 to 20%. But again, children are disproportionately affected, and up to 42% of children 6 years of age and younger. Also, there's other sensitive subpopulations, such as those with asthma or chronic respiratory illness, such as COPD. Let's see if this works. So I'm a health scientist in the CDC's Climate and Health Program, and those who work with me in the climate and their grantees, you've seen this before. So you've seen it several times. But this really, so we're interested in studying the various health effects of climate change, and one of the expected health impacts of climate change is the increase in allergic respiratory illness. So this results in changes in temperature and CO2 concentrations affecting production in plants. So this really kind of underscores this graphic, kind of gives you a good summary, although a little busy summary, of all the health effects or health impacts of climate change. So according to the recently published National Climate Assessment, climate change resulting in warmer seasonal air temperatures and frost-free days. In other words, this is an indicator of milder winters, can contribute to shifts in the timing of pollen seasonality. So in other words, climate change will contribute to the changes of timing of onset, peak, and end length of season. So in a changing climate, CO2 concentrations are also expected to increase. So previous studies have found that a higher CO2 concentrations alone have been shown to elevate plant-based allergens such as ragweed. So shifts in climate will also affect the geographic range of plants, including those that produce allergenic pollen. So here's a map of changes to the plant hardiness zones. So the USDA plant hardiness zones are a standard for gardeners and growers throughout the country to determine which plants are likely to thrive at certain locations. So we are already experiencing observed changes to these plant zones. So that map to the left and those pink areas, those are the areas between those zones, and those are the ones that are experiencing these changes. So it just highlights those areas that are changing. And where I'm from, the Atlanta area is one of those pink areas. So here's an interesting study in the central United States and Canada. It's this TRANSEC study conducted by Louis Ziska of the USDA. So what he found is that as you increase in latitude, you go north, the ragweed pollen season is lengthening. So this study was highlighted in the National Climate Assessment in an EPA's document on climate change indicators. So the study provides a nice framework to study pollen changes in different locations, which we really follow the same framework. We kind of follow the same methodology that they used. So here's the purpose of our own study. So we're moving away from the background of the health effects. So our own study really attempts to determine the average start date, the peak date, the end date, and the length of the pollen seasons for each of these sites that the study. We have 9 of them, and I'll go into that a little in more detail. We also wanted to develop a methodology that allows us to compare pollen season timing across these multiple sites. And so after we develop this methodology, we then want to compare these actual pollen season trends. So additionally, we wanted to determine if pollen season timing for each of these sites are associated with climatic factors. And again, this was kind of from the previous study. So when I say climatic factors, these are your 30-year seasonal trends. Or other factors such as location, such as your specific latitude and longitude. And this is the updated part. So we're going to identify trends in the pollen count and season timing. And we're also going to identify how year-to-year variations in climate affect pollen counts. So again, that is saying, so will fall precipitation or fall temperatures affect the pollen count in spring? And here are our 9 sites. So Albuquerque, New Mexico, we have Atlanta, Georgia, Baltimore, Bangor, Maine, Detroit, Madison, Minneapolis, Raleigh, or however you want to say it, in Sarasota, Florida. Yeah, I'm sorry. Here is our table showing the years of data coverage. So each one of these sites, I guess I should kind of go into it. So some of these sites are National Allergy Bureau sites, which is kind of your gold standard for pollen counting. Some of them are not. Some of them are speciated. Some of them are not. So when in the type of data, you have grouped data. So that would be your trees, grasses, or weeds. And when I say type of data taxa, they actually record your oak, maple, birch pollen type of pollen counts. So unfortunately, for some of those that are grouped, we can't really determine the predominant type of pollen, but maybe we can also, using other data or other measures or indicators, that maybe we could estimate that based on land use and land cover data. So in our analysis, we used a cumulative percentage approach. This is used by other folks as well, from Louis Ziska that I mentioned, and Emberlin in Europe. So let me see here. I should go through my notes. For this cumulative percentage approach, we used the 1% and the 99%. So the 1%, we take the pollen count, a cumulative pollen count for each season. So 1% when 1% of that occurs, that is our season onset. And when 99% of that occurs, it's our season end. So we use that approach so we can compare pollen seasons from year to year, and we can also compare those pollen seasons throughout different sites, throughout different pollen sites. Because as you see, we have different overlapping data. We do not have overlapping data on these years. And sometimes we do not have speciated data. So this kind of goes into, this is a graphic of more of our data and methods on what we did. So typically, I mean, in not every site, but in the Atlanta area, which I have really studied a lot, that we see a bimodal pollen count. So you have your spring pollen and you have your fall ragweed pollen. So a lot of you probably are are familiar with the spring pollen count. But also, I mean, ragweed is actually one in the fall. This happens in the fall. It's one of the is one of the most allergenic plant species known. So this is what we do is we divide the data, and you can kind of see that bimodal pollen count. So if you take that cumulative percentage approach, and you were supposed to you would do that all throughout the whole data. So in the top graph there, you see those black vertical bars. So that is the 1% and the 99%. So you would see that is my end of season, which, you know, actually, if you actually overlay that with the real data, you're saying, well, that's not really the end of the season. So in B, we recalculate this dividing the data in half, from January to June to calculate the onset of the spring season, and from July to December to calculate the timing of the fall season. The graph of the blue vertical bars, that really shows you that's calculating using the 1% and the 99%. It really defines your season onset and end much better, than your top graphic there. Okay, and here is our weather data. So in this analysis, we pulled in the weather data. We try to get data coverage. This came from NOAA's NCEI. So that is the National Center for Environmental Information, and those are the folks in Asheville that we work with. So we, within the Climate and Health Program, we have a scientist there that we pay half of his time to be in Atlanta and over there. Here is just our climate data, how we define this is how we define our seasons. So we're defining winter as December, January, February, the spring, March, April, May, summer, June, July, August, the fall, September, October, November. So we take all these average observations, temperature minimum, temperature maximum, and precipitation. So these are the results. Predominant types of pollen for each month. So this is kind of our outline of these results and what we will be talking about. So these are for those sites that we could determine the predominant type of pollen. We're seeing that oak pollen is quite prevalent. However, in the northern areas, we're seeing mulberry, like in Madison, Wisconsin, and in Minneapolis, Minnesota, it's really oak and ash. A lot of juniper, but in Sarasota, Florida, in the southern states, we're seeing a lot of oak, and that's a very highly allergenic pollen. And I believe here in Anchorage on Sunday, I believe they said it was a birch pollen was the predominant pollen here. And here's our different fall pollen types. It's predominantly ragweed is what you're sneezing, is what's causing you to sneeze. Here is a Gantt chart, kind of telling you the timing of the spring pollen season. So these red horizontal bars, they kind of tell you the onset and the end of the season. The black vertical tick mark is the peak timing. Here is all of our data, kind of a boring table here, but we have that as well in some other charts. And here is the really interesting thing. So again, this is the analysis. So there's two types of analysis. It's the year-to-year climate variability, and then how the pollen season onset relates to just 30-year temperature averages. So this is the graphic that kind of talks to you about that shows the data for the average temperatures over 30 years. So we are seeing a definite linear relationship between season onset spring and temperature. I mean, that makes sense, right? So your pollen seasons in Bangor, Maine are going to occur a lot later than Sarasota, Florida. We also looked at latitude, longitude, also a very nicely fitting line. The R2 is 0.999. I didn't even think that was possible. But I mean, that's what the data is telling me. So it's a very nice fit. So I guess what that saying is that, you know, temperature is definitely a factor. latitude and longitude is also a factor. I'm sorry, excuse me. Latitude is definitely a factor as well. So if you were to create any types of models on timing when you're comparing different sites, you're also going to have to take consideration your where it's located, but also temperature as well. 5 minutes. Okay, so for every 1 degree increase, we also see, so this is based on our linear model, the tree pollen's onset is delayed by 3.9 days. So these are pollen count trends over time. This is kind of important stuff. So we are not seeing an increase in pollen count in all of our sites. That might be because there is a lack of a long record. So sometimes we only have 6 years of data. But so for most of these sites, for four of our sites, we are seeing an increasing trend. So in Atlanta, Georgia, Bangor, Maine, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Raleigh, North Carolina. Here's our data points. Scatter plot. More scatter plots. Okay, so this is, so previously before I did this, I really looked at all the different, trends in different types of pollen just for the Atlanta area. So really, this is, we're just seeing a lot of increasing pollen types. Just to go into the other part of the analysis, I'll skip over this a little. This is for the Atlanta area. We looked at each one of these different pollen types, and we looked at the timing and onset. And I think actually a graphic like this, maybe it'll look a little easier to understand, but would be very useful for our allergists that we pull this data from, so they can actually tell their patients, hey, look, you might need to start taking Allegra at this peak of pollen timing. So there's a really distinct timing of maybe if you're allergic to oak, maybe there's a certain time to it. And, you know, I talked to some people and they're really allergic in the earlier months, and maybe that's your alder pollen in the Atlanta area. Okay, so this is kind of the newer analysis that we just finished up. So this is, again, the tree pollen and year-to-year climate variations. So spring and winter climate, we are finding that spring and winter climate conditions affect pollen season timing. I mean, this is not that groundbreaking, but to actually get some, I mean, it makes sense, right? Your spring temperatures are going to affect the timing of pollen season. But it's nice to actually get some really empirical evidence on that, especially and consistently over these different geographic areas. So, and what is really interesting is that spring and winter temperatures and precipitation actually affect pollen count. So this was really talking about the pollen timing, and here we're talking about fall pollen count. So the fall temperature minimums are actually affecting pollen count in the Atlanta area. Winter precipitation in Detroit, Michigan, and spring precipitation in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So, you know, and notice these, each one of these variables are a little different, but there's also different types of pollen in each of these areas. So Atlanta, Georgia, you have your oak pollen. Detroit, Michigan, I can't remember. It is some oak and then some other types. And Minneapolis, different types of pollen as well. So let's go over then, excuse me here, let me find my notes. So what are the implications for climate change? So here is the observed changes in climate here. So here we have the observed warming. This is from the National Climate Assessment in 2014. So this is just observed changes in the warming temperatures. So we are seeing these associations between fall temperature minimums in the Atlanta area. Maybe we'll just focus on that because it's a lot of data to focus on. But how will that change? So here's our observed changes. For in the National Climate Assessment, they give you scenarios, and they also make some climate projections. And they actually have fall projections, seasonal projections. So focusing on the Atlanta area, we are seeing that temperatures will increase in the future. So these are the 2041 to 2070. So that might have implications on pollen count in the Atlanta area in the near future. Well, I shouldn't say near future, but 2041, 2070. And here's your observed U.S. precipitation changes. We also are seeing our climate change scenarios about where exactly it is going to change, if there's an increase or a decrease. As you notice, there's actually a decrease in precipitation in some areas and an increase in others. So that will also have implications for pollen count in Minneapolis or in the Michigan area. And also for the timing of pollen season as well. So here's a summary of our results. So oak is the predominant pollen types throughout the spring pollen season, except in Detroit and Madison, Wisconsin. So ragweed is a predominant fall pollen type. Average spring temperatures and latitude are significantly correlated with the timing of pollen seasons. Timing of tree pollen seasons are correlated with year-to-year climate variations. So these warmer spring temperatures tend to hasten the onset of pollen season. Tree pollen count correlated with precipitation and preceding fall temperatures. Again, not everywhere, but in the Atlanta area. And wetter conditions in winter and spring increase the tree pollen count. So there's a biological, that makes sense biologically in the Atlanta area with the formation of buds in the oak pollen. And also in the winter conditions for Detroit and Minneapolis, it might affect the way that buds are setting. So what we have read based on previous literature is that sometimes fall temperatures will affect the pollen count because the buds can't set, or they set differently and they may be producing pollen or they may be producing leaves. So our evidence, our results are corroborated by previous literature. And the conclusions, latitude and average temperature are significant predictors of pollen season timing, but also temperature. And year-to-year changes in seasonal climate are also affect the timing of pollen season and pollen counts. So future directions, incorporate future climate models into pollen analysis. I guess we need to do that more. Analysis incorporating more pollen speciated data. Assess the effectiveness of using proxy measures. I didn't mention it, but we've tried to use Google Trends data to do that. Incorporate the health data into that and really develop an evaluation of an early warning system and a communication strategy for high pollen count days. And that is my analysis. That's the end of the presentation.